You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com. On this episode of Cheesehead Radio,
the Packers lose to the hated Vikings on Sunday.
And lose yet another Pro Bowl offensive lineman as well.
The jury's officially out on Mason Crosby.
And the playoff picture could get muddy going into the bye week.
Four quarters of Packers Talk.
Right here on
Cheesehead Radio.
Hello again, Cheesehead Nation. We are now 12 years into this experiment called Cheesehead Radio. And in what should be a week of gratitude, we're finding it hard to be all that thankful for the Packers' missed opportunities in Minnesota last Sunday. As is normally the case, your hosts tonight are the aggravated Kelly Hodgson, known as That Packer Girl on Twitter. Also joining us is the flummoxed CD Angeli, Tundra Vision on Twitter. And lastly, little old me, your voice of reason, Jersey Al of Packers Talk and Cheesehead TV. You can follow me at Jersey Al GBP on Twitter. That's it for the introductions. Let's get this show on the road.
Well, you know, flummoxed isn't really a bad word. It's really not. Because, you know, last week when we did the show, I think we had just shut out the Seahawks. We were all riding on cloud nine. We're the number one seed, you know, in the NFC playoff picture. And man, I mean, it's bad enough just losing to the Vikings anytime, anywhere. But yeah, it just really gives you this weird feeling, real weird vibes about where this team is moving forward.
Confused, right?
Exactly.
A little confused. Now, you're confused. Kelly, on the other hand, was aggravated because I know her love for Minnesota Viking fans in her in her area of where she lives. So I'm sure she's extremely aggravated having to deal with that. And those were the two reasons for my choices.
And of course, one of my husband's really good friends was like, hey, how about those Vikings? And I'm like, shut up.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to break it all down for you. It's four quarters of Packers Talk right here on Cheesehead Radio. First quarter, the Packers take one on the chin. In a game, it feels like they could have won and should have won and would have won, but they drop it, you know, and it was just a painful, you know, Vikings kneeling on the ball and letting the clock run out to 3 seconds. Like, they could have scored a touchdown if they wanted, but they just hold off, kick a field goal, walk off the field, and it's just this deflated feeling. One thing that I keep thinking of, though, is if you told me in September that when we went to Minnesota, we would have three All-Pro players not playing, three of our Pro Bowl players not playing, and three starters on top of that out, plus our MVP quarterback has COVID, would I have predicted a win? No, I wouldn't have. But they still played well enough to win and did not.
Yeah, I mean, the only difference was what I predicted they would need to win this game, and that was create a turnover. And God, they had chances to create turnovers. And just one after the other, they all failed for a variety of reasons. Pretty much, I think if almost any one of them had happened, they probably win this game.
Especially the last one. But oh, I know we're going to talk about it later. You can't leave points on the field when you miss a field goal. We lost by 3, so do the math.
Yeah, and that's 2 games now where Crosby misses have been the difference, at least in a tie, you know, in a game, in a loss. So it is a big deal. The first one we're going to talk about, I think, has to be the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, or to be correct, the Mr. Hyde, Dr. Jekyll of Aaron Rodgers in his first half to his second half. Al, I'm going to turn this over to you because I know you're itching to talk about it.
Actually, I'm tired of talking about it, right?
And he's been talking about it all week.
It's kind of like
not all week, all season.
And it's only Tuesday.
All season, not all week. I mean, every week pretty much I write, when are they going to actually come out and actually try to play in rhythm and create some type of tempo rather than just try all these long shots downfield and try to win the game in the first quarter.
How much is that? Is Aaron Rodgers versus Matt LaFleur?
Someone asked me that today, and I think it's both to this extent. I think some of the plays are called where that's the primary progression, but there are plenty of other plays where maybe it's 3rd and 5, let's say, and LaFleur has a couple of routes over the middle, you know, intended to get a first down. But then Rodgers sees the outside receiver one-on-one with a cornerback and says, ah, okay, that's my matchup, and I'm going there. And he tried to force a couple to MVS down the sideline in the first quarter that, you know, he wasn't really open. And, you know, if you would just take what they would get, were giving him, and as Hank Stram used to say, matriculate down the field and get some points, then later on in the game, those things open up. And that's exactly what happened when they finally did find their way, you know, at the end of the first half and then through the second half, and they were playing differently. Then suddenly the bomb to MVS is there with 2 minutes left. So I don't know. I mean, I'm only a fan, but it seems rather clear to me. I don't know.
Well, it's like nobody gave the run a chance in the first half. That was the frustrating part. But as he started to find his rhythm, that's when you saw Dylan take off. That's when you saw that kind of fun play with Equimania St. Brown. That's when you see things like the screen passes he finally noticed after most of the game.
Or how about the Cobb toss to Dylan?
Oh, yeah, with the backup to the backup. He could have ran. He became the backup to the backup to the backup quarterback, and it was beautiful.
Right.
Because when you have a run, you can do things like that. Otherwise, everyone knows, just go flatten Rodgers, and they have nothing.
Like I said, I'm getting tired of it every week.
If you remember, there was one player where the prognosticators actually said, oh, let's watch this replay. And Aaron Rodgers, and look at Aaron, he had his eyes on Devontae Adams the whole time, and he was just waiting for him to get open. And then he had, oh, what a great pass to Devontae Adams. And it was like, yeah, but that happens when it's not successful, too. Mm-hmm. So when you're saying, Al, maybe there are some plays being called from the sideline that are designed passes. If he's just focusing in on one receiver, and we know his favorite, that's where you start getting some of these things where he's sitting in the backfield for 4, 5, 6 seconds. And
everyone has him decoded by then.
So, and Kelly, I'll kind of turn this over to you. Much ado being made over this toe. Now, we know that toe injuries are pretty serious. There's been players who've actually retired because the toe pain is so great. There's been speculation that this could possibly be a reaction to his toe, because they haven't come out and just said it's turf toe. I mean, if it was just turf toe, I don't think there's any reason they wouldn't come out and just say it's turf toe.
And he actually said it's much worse than turf toe. He didn't say what it was, but he said in an interview it's much worse pain than turf toe. So go ahead.
And there is this COVID-related toe infection or toe condition that seems to be very painful that we're just going to happily call TOVID. Kelly, what are you seeing on this?
Okay, I don't think it's TOVID or COVID toes. That's more just some inflammation. They can turn purple. They can turn red. They can get blistery. They can itch. And it's a dermatological phenomenon. I think that what you're seeing actually is turf toe. And if it's it's worse than turf toe. Well, let's break down turf toe. I explained it many years ago. When we were on out of the pocket, because I forget who had it. Was it Eddie Lacy or somebody? It's an injury where the muscles of the toe attach, where you've got the toe bone attaches to the foot bone, and there's tendons, and that's what helps you point your toes. And if you come down really hard on it and hyperflex, so you plant your toes and your foot goes forward, you can injure and cause inflammation to that muscle group. In the extreme versions of it, you can rupture the tendon, and sometimes you can pull off flex of bone. So what I think he has is just a really bad case of turf toe. If it's just inflammation, you can rest it and it's going to get better. In the more severe cases, it may require surgery to reattach a tendon and tack everything back down. And in these super severe cases, you end up doing fusion of those two bones where you lose some flexibility. So do I think it's COVID toe? It's fun to mock him because I'm going to be mocking him the rest of the season. But I really don't think it's COVID toes, because everything I've read about it is COVID toe is more of an irritation and inflammation that's going to just bother you. Where turf toe, it's how you plant. It's how your foot as a fulcrum. That affects the mechanics of the foot. Everyone thinks turf toe is like some stub toe or not. It's a joint injury is what it is.
Hey, maybe during his quarantine time, he went off his diet and he's got gout.
Perhaps.
Don't get her started on that, please.
Why? Don't get her going on. He's not like 70. It's probably, he's got turf toe. And I forget which talking head was saying it's turf toe. I think, was it Schefter or whoever? Some, well, not that he's a reliable source, but.
Well, if he says it, it must be true.
Well, one, I don't know if it was him or some of the talking heads said it's turf toe. And it makes sense because if he hyperflexes his foot when he's getting drilled into the ground with a sack, I could totally see him getting that type of injury because it's very common in football.
As opposed to dermatological phenomenons.
Exactly.
Right.
A rash is what I'm getting at. It's not a rash.
Got it.
Al, I'm going to turn this back to you because I think you predicted this fantastic. Yeah, you did.
What did I predict?
Don't make his head swell. Come on.
And I just want to acknowledge it.
Bad enough already.
Oh, gee. Oh,
Al, you said that you were afraid that the Packers defense was going to make Kirk Cousins look way better than he actually was. And they did. And there were times I was watching. He was throwing passes up. It reminded me a little bit. Do you guys remember the Favre
floaters.
Game? Yeah. Do you remember the game where
floaters.
Brett Favre's father passed away? Right. And the receivers came up to him. And they said, don't worry about it. Anything you throw, we're going to catch. And they did. I mean, yeah, Donald Driver and those guys, they were going up into the air and pulling those passes down. You know,
incredible catches.
In the air. And that's what it reminded me of. Not obviously. Or Favre or anything like that, but he was throwing, they weren't even ducks, they were pheasants that he was throwing up there. And for some
reason. Is that a higher level of floating pass? A pheasant,
it's a lower level of floating pass, actually. But
it depends how you want to look at it.
Yeah. But he was just throwing these up here, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's a dead ball. And either there was no corners or no defensive backs near the receiver, or you know what? Justin Jefferson or Adam Thielen went up and got it. And they did. They made some fantastic catches. But yeah, our defense did not play as well as we needed them to. Certainly not as well as they played the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you know that's the thing with Cousins. You know, if you let him get any, you know, a little bit comfortable, now he's got receivers that, like you said, he doesn't have to be perfect with, right? And we know he's far from perfect. And it's great for him that he's got those guys there. You know, while the Packers did pressure him, I don't think they quite did it enough or made him nervous at all enough to actually affect him as much as they needed to. So, unfortunately, I guess my prediction was kind of true.
And how many times did Savage coulda, woulda, shoulda almost intercepted? Was it two or three times?
At least two. I think there might have been a third.
If you move on to the next section of the script, I've actually looked at
whoops. Okay.
Okay, let's go to the next section of the script.
Kelly, why don't you segue into the next
part
of the
script? Right below part C is part D.
Part D. yeah, there were. He was painted a bit of a goat, but he couldn't seal the deal with any of these plays. That was the frustrating thing. You know, there was a back and forth of that last one. Was it was a football move? You know, and nowadays I don't even know
who painted him as a goat.
That's what the script says. So, CD, who painted him as a goat? We want to.
I think, you know, that was just what everyone kept saying at the end, because you have to have a scapegoat at the end. It's like, oh, if he would have just made that interception, we would have won the game. And we even said
he did make that interception, if you ask me.
The game would have been over. It would have totally been over.
But, you know, it goes back down to the usual thing. Yes, we love to make a scapegoat on one player late in the game. But my God, go back to that first half when we were down 20 to what, 20 to 7. Of course. It looks like the one play is the big deal, but we were shooting ourselves in the foot all day. That stated, I think a lot of people have observed, you know, they've seen the knee down on the ground, you know, in a freeze frame and him holding the ball. And it's like, you know, would a wide receiver, if this was a wide receiver, would that be considered a reception?
No, it would have been just like Dez Bryant. He didn't hold on to it long enough.
But they changed that rule.
What is
the rule now? What is the rule? I don't even know it's a reception anymore. I get confused.
Nobody does, so there's no answer to that.
Because 2 feet equals one knee, which equals one butt.
It's like up to the interpretation of whoever is deciding it that day.
Mm-hmm.
Because the football move was the knee, correct?
Well, I think what they said during the broadcast is that he did not make a specific football move. And I don't know if that's something you need to have more specifically on an interception versus a reception.
I need a third foot or a second knee or two butts or what?
So catching it, having his feet hit the ground, and then going down and have his knee hit the ground while he has possession of the ball is not a football move.
But the ground can't cause a fumble.
Is what we're being told.
What? Yeah. What?
But they're saying he didn't have possession before the ground caused the fumble. That's where it comes
from. You said everyone wants to rail at him, but this loss was a death of 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. It wasn't on him. It was the stupid penalties. It was the cornerbacks not playing as sharp as they had been. And it was Rodgers. And it was Crosby. You know, you can't just point the finger at one person this time. You know, granted, his is the play you're going to remember because it was the last of the error.
Right. I mean, I was actually maybe a little more frustrated with the Kingsley Kiki helmet-to-helmet contact.
Oh, my God. Was that such an amateur BS type play? It's like, come on, guy. Come on. Act like you've been there before.
Act like who's been there before?
Act like you've been
Well, he was before. There. His helmet was there in Kirk Cousins' helmet. So,
such a stupid.
Yes, he was there before.
Stupid penalty. Oh my word.
Yes, it was a dumb penalty, and I don't know. I don't want to say it was ticky tack because we'd be upset if it happened to Aaron Rodgers, but it has happened to Aaron Rodgers, and they haven't
in
called
that game so as it, well.
it was a judgment call that unfortunately wiped out a couple of big plays. And I think that goes to
including one of the interceptions.
Well, two of them, technically, if you look at how the refereeing was going. And I think that's what it comes down to. And last week, if you were listening to the show, I made a very poignant observation that our defense those last few weeks has been so different from what we got used to in the past several years, where we were just not being dependent on turnovers or big plays or having to get a sack to, you know, force these really long third downs or something. We were forcing three and outs, just going in and playing ball. We're getting in the backfield. We're disrupting the pass. We're stuffing the run. And that's making us really, really successful. And it seems like this week, it was the opposite. We were depending on these big plays. We needed this interception. If we don't get this interception, we're going to lose. That's literally what we're saying, and that's the opposite of what our defense has been doing. Actually, the Vikings on third down were, 9 out of 13 on the day? That's crazy. That's great. You can't let the opposing offense get it that regularly.
Well, here's the thing. When they had a third down to make, they didn't throw the ball 40 yards downfield.
No.
You know, they picked up the first down, got themselves 4 new downs, and went from there. So
right.
That is that.
I'm working on my clicking noises here. But anyway, there were a lot of positives that came out of the game. I mean, obviously, Aaron Rodgers looked good in the second half. Wish he could have done it the whole game. A.J. Dillon, I know, Al, you talked to him this week. He looks pretty solid. I mean, I'm not saying we don't miss Aaron Jones, but he certainly looked like he had Aaron Jones-like numbers on the day.
Yeah, he's a different style, obviously, running back than Aaron Jones, but very effective, and he's proven everybody who said he couldn't catch the ball to be completely wrong, as he's not only catching the ball, but he's making difficult catches, you know, spinning around in the air and at the top of his jump, bringing in the ball, and then picking up 7 or 8 yards afterwards on those catches. So, you know, it's nice to have that dynamic of Aaron Jones and the possibility of breaking a huge run, which he gives you. But I think the Packers are fine, you know, just with A.J. Dillon if they have to go another game like that.
And I suspect they will. And we're heading into a bye after
after
this week. So I would give, if I was a coach, I would give Jones a heal up because we really need him in the final stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that.
On defense, I thought Preston Smith, you know, we were very worried about not having Rashawn Gary. And of course, Za'Darius Smith has been out all season. Preston looked like 2019 Preston.
Oh, absolutely. He was
very active.
And I think Kenny Clark was, especially at the beginning of the game, was all over the place.
See that first play of the game?
Yes.
Imagine what that center was thinking, right? Okay, here's the first play of the game. This guy, I'd have to go up against all game, has just totally destroyed me. Mm-hmm. He's put me to the ground, and when I got up, he pushed me back down to the ground.
And if you notice, their way of dealing with Kenny Clark was they started holding him on almost every play after that.
Yeah, well, he's used to that. But
mm-hmm. And, of course, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, finally, as you said earlier, Al, that, you know, they've been working and trying to soften him up, you know, coming back off IR. And Rodgers has this tendency to say, hey, don't worry, I'm going to get you the ball today. I'm going to get you a touchdown today. So he's been launching these long bombs to him that have just been too long or out of bounds, or MBS hasn't had any separation. All of a sudden, boom, in the fourth quarter. Beautiful play.
Yeah, my problem with those early ones is the situation when they're done in, you know, at the time. You know, there's perfect time to do it, such as in that fourth quarter, first down, they get the ball. Who's expecting them to go deep on first down? And they've got, you know, 2 minutes to go downfield and score a touchdown. Nobody.
So but then unfortunately, we had 2 minutes left on the clock, which was way too much time.
Yeah. But, you know, you take your 7 points when you can get them.
Yeah. I mean, it's better to get the seven then than never to get it at all.
Right. But I was really happy to see Rodgers reconnect with St. Brown, because he has been on the receiving end of Rodgers' ire when he hasn't caught it in the past. And it was really refreshing to see that Rodgers trusted him and went back to him on this game.
Yeah, he's looking a little bit like a different guy than he did earlier in the season when he first got his chances to play. You know, he didn't quite, maybe it just took him a little while to get going, but he just didn't look into it that much, you know, and the effort wasn't there. And the effort yesterday was fantastic. And LaFleur lauded him in his press conference, how hard he worked and the effort that he gave. And he said something like, I've never seen him that emotional during a game, you know, show that much emotion. So he was definitely into it. And the results showed. I mean, if that's how he's going to play, I would expect him to get more shots.
Yeah, I think he's definitely earned himself a roster spot now. And one person we haven't mentioned is DeGuara. He makes me miss Bob Tonyan a little less. And I think we're beginning to see
at least on one play, definitely.
One play. But where was the big dog the whole time? Was he hurt?
He did go out a couple of times. He was like on and off. They said something about they were working on his foot or something. So he may have been. It was never officially announced or anything, but he may have been fighting off something. But yeah, he really did not do much during that game.
Maybe it was COVID.
Could have been, or gout. Yeah.
Marquez Valdes-Scantling on that particular touchdown, according to NFL Next Gen Stats, etc., recorded the fastest speed of any player on a field this season, 22.09 miles per hour.
Yeah. You could see him just accelerate when... As the safety, I guess it was a safety, was kind of still with him, you know, maybe one step ahead even, and the ball's in the air, and you could see him just like the jets turn on and just blow by the safety and bring that ball in. And I think that's probably the point where they measured him at that speed, because he really took off.
Oh, he accelerated into it, no doubt. And you could almost see the smile on his face as he headed towards the end zone.
So I guess our last topic we'll bring up before we end the first quarter, Justin Jefferson. Holy cow.
Why couldn't we get him?
I wanted him when we all did. Draft. We all did. He's great. And it always happens
that the guy that everybody wants for the Packers comes back and is a Packer killer. Yes. It always seems to happen that way.
I was literally counting on the Vikings roster how many guys that I was going, oh, I would like to get, oh, the Vikings. Oh, I want that. Kendricks, I think, was another guy that
Eric Kendricks, absolutely. Yeah.
There's one more there, too, besides Jefferson on defense, and I can't remember who it was, but I was like,
safety, Harrison Smith.
Yes. So I'm sitting there like, these are all the guys I was kind of Jones
that we wanted, and they got them because they were worse than us, and they had an earlier draft pick.
So, and he did make our first round pick, who I think has had a great season, Eric Stokes. But yeah, he looked a little bit like a rookie.
Yeah, no doubt. But you know, to me, Jefferson is, you know, he's about to enter into that top five conversation, if you ask me. I mean, he's a handful to stay with, a handful.
It's a good thing he has Kirk Cousins, though, because Kirk Cousins sometimes remembers he's Kirk Cousins and underutilizes his wide receivers.
But I don't think Devontae was, he wasn't this good his first year, and I don't even think he wasn't good his second year.
Oh, no, his second year, forget about it, it was terrible.
Second year, people were wanting him out on a, you know, that's when everybody, out of town on a rail.
There was, so, what's his name? Matt Schneidman just wrote an article in the Athletic. It was a whole big story on Devontae Adams and how, you know, there was after a game in, that was 2015, that was his second year, where he was driving in the car with his mother, who had come out from California to see the game, and he was yelling, I hate football, I hate football. He was so, like, distraught because he was dropping balls, he was getting hurt, everything was horrible. And then year three, he completely turned it around. But so, yeah, and they were saying they were all kinds of Janice, not Devontae, Janice, not Adams hashtags on Twitter.
Oh, God,
and that kind
yes,
of thing.
I remember that. Was it?
Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, that'll take us to the end of our first quarter. And I would say, AJ Dillon aside, I think we're going to have to call this one a loss.
Yeah, pretty much.
So 0-1 going into the second quarter. This one will be a little shorter, but no less serious.
no less depressing.
Yes. Elgton Jenkins, he has a torn up ACL, is on IR for the rest of the season.
Which means he won't come back until like next year this time.
Middle, yeah, exactly. Middle of next year at the earliest.
So that's tough because we already are missing David Bakhtiari. So it's basically.
He still isn't back. And actually we had some a cleanup arthroscopic surgery, I guess, right, is what we heard.
Yeah, it was, you know, just probably shagging little bits of, you know, non-vital cartilage floating around. I wouldn't read much into that procedure. A cleanup procedure is just getting the floaters out. No big deal.
Good.
Just getting out the floaters. Okay. He has already been said that he will be out until after the bye. So that is setting us up for a pretty interesting game against the Rams.
Oh, yeah.
So Yosh Nijman. Did I say
Nijman.
That?
Nijman.
Yosh Nijman.
Nijman.
Will now be stepping in at left tackle, who is now our, kind of like Kelly likes to say, our backup to the backup to the backup at this point. He's played well in a few starts, but obviously we're having Aaron Donald going against us this week. So we're really hoping that Aaron Rodgers stays healthy after this week.
And Nijman, yeah, he's had some good plays, but I remember him. Was it preseason where he really wasn't that great?
I don't know that I'd agree with that.
He's definitely a step down, but now we're getting to the point where we're kind of shaking the couch for loose change to look, see what we have for linemen at this point, offensive linemen.
Yeah, I actually thought he did pretty well, both in pre, well, the first, maybe you're thinking of his first game in preseason where he struggled a little bit.
Yeah.
But then he really turned it around after that. And he did a fairly decent job when he had to step in for a couple of games when Jenkins was hurt previously this season. So I don't think it's the worst situation in the world. Just the fact that we're going up against Von Miller, Aaron Donald, and Leonard Floyd, you know, doesn't make it ideal. Yeah,
it's kind of scary. Yeah.
If not for that, I'd feel okay about him being in there, but we'll see.
So I think you're going to see a lot of backup on the blind side with tight ends and possibly even A.J. Dillon on some plays, just trying to shore up that wall to protect Rodgers.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you guys a question. If you could arrange the line with our current active players, how would you alter it? Would you keep Nijman as a left tackle? Would you move people around? How would you configure it? Discuss.
Thoughts? I would just leave everything as is and just bring Nijman in as a left tackle. I wouldn't make any other changes at this point.
Yeah, you don't want to shuffle too many people around because
it's weak enough as it is. Yeah, it's weak enough as it is. Don't weaken it more.
We got the backup center. Yeah, it could be worse. It could be worse. We could have Jason Spriggs still, which I really didn't know until the other night that he's still in the league.
Yeah, he's hanging around somewhere.
There was someone who someone on TV was making a comment on how Elgton Jenkins really is a rarity. And it's funny because you probably remember back to the old Ted Thompson beginning of his career and how he always wanted to have these interchangeable offensive linemen and how they say, you know, offensive linemen don't like that. they want to stay on one side. If they're on the left side, they want to stay on the left side. If they're a guard, they kind of want to stay a guard. And Elgton Jenkins is kind of a rarity where, yeah, he's okay. You know, kind of a physical freak like that he can play all these positions. But when it comes to everyone else, yeah, let's keep them where they're comfortable right now.
Agreed.
So question for you.
Me?
You, Kelly.
Okay, yes.
When Bakhtiari does finally return, we've all been crossing our fingers for I don't know how long. Can we expect him, or how long is it going to be once he is cleared to play? Can we expect him to be the Bakhtiari that we actually know and remember?
That is the $64,000 question. A lot of ACL injuries are season, or even with repair, are career ending. He's in a position where he can wear one of those giant hinged braces to really reinforce his knee, and I suspect he will be. How that'll affect his form and function, I don't know. Recovery for most ACL injuries are optimistic is a year. So holding out, we're getting closer and closer. You know, if we get to the past the bye week, closer and closer to that year mark, where I think you can actually be a little more comfortable with his level of healing. You know, everyone thinks of Adrian Peterson when he came back and it was, what, 6-7 months? It was something ridiculous. And that is not the norm. A year of recovery is pretty average. So the jury's still out on his performance, but I expect it's going to be strapped up. It's going to be braced just because of the nature of the position he plays. But also to his benefit, he can wear one. It's not like he has to be a mobile wide receiver or a running back. So I don't think it's going to impact him as much as other positions.
I don't know, guys. Second quarter, this one's got to be another loss, though. Elton Jenkins being out, that one hurts. So moving on to the third quarter. Mason Crosby.
Yeah, I do not see this being a win either, boys.
Right off the bat, you start with that.
Yeah, because let's have that uncomfortable conversation about him.
Well, you know, and this is so ironic for us, Al, because 2012.
Ironic.
I mean, we went toe to toe every week on Mason Crosby, and you were very much in the camp of let's burn him at the stake. Maybe not to that extent. Sort of along those lines.
Bring in some competition was all I ever said.
Yes, and I was always kind of like, this really is not Mason Crosby's fault. This is...
But it was back then, but anyway.
No, I still blame it on a man by the name of Mr. Slocum.
Slocum doesn't snap the ball, hold the ball, or kick it.
So. And he got fired for his ineptitude.
He does play. He played a lot of mind games, and I think that when you're a kicker, that impacts you a lot. Anyway, Mason Crosby really struggling. His first kick, which was a 54-yarder, which was impressive, but I remember that coming off his foot, and I said, that's like a knuckleball. It did not look attractive, and I know that, you know, the correct response is, it doesn't matter how it looks.
Nothing worse than a non-attractive kick.
Exactly. And the announcer said, oh, that's going to be great for his confidence, and I'm like, that's not great for his confidence. That was the crappiest-looking kick I've ever seen.
It was thank God it went through. Confidence builder at all.
I might have had my eyes closed because I don't remember what it looked like.
See, now, guys, my superstition of not watching kicks, it doesn't sound so crazy, does it? It's like, oh, I can't even watch.
Right.
And then true to form, they trot him out for a 32-yarder that should be just a chip shot for him, and it doinks off the goalpost. Al, I'm sure you went back and looked at the tape. I went back and looked at it a couple times. I'm not seeing a whole lot of issues with that snap or that hold.
No, it was
all on Crosby. And right now, Crosby, unfortunately, is inside his own head. And that's his problem. He's not hurt. It's not the mechanics. It's a head game.
Mm-hmm. So he's now, for his last 14 attempts, he's hit 6.
Yeah.
Which means he's missed 8.
That's an F-.
That's not acceptable for a kicker, especially a kicker that you're hoping is going to be there for close games in the playoffs. Now, Ryan Wood was the brave one. Who went to Matt LaFleur.
The sacrificial lamb. They're like, go ask him. It's your turn.
And you know, when you ask Matt LaFleur anything, he's going to say, especially if it's a, you know, player over the age of 35, to say, you know, that's all on me and I take responsibility for it. Yeah, whatever, Matt. Said if there is any chance we're going to move on from Mason Crosby, his response is absolutely not.
Translation, there's nothing out there.
But I thought interestingly, within the conversation, he really kind of threw Corey Bajorquez and Steve Wirtle under the bus. You know, he said, no, we're not going to do it. It never falls squarely on one individual. Our operation has to improve, and that's from the snap to the hold to the kick. But like I said, we didn't see any issues with the snap or the hold. So to kind of rally the wagons around Mason, we're throwing the snapper and the holder again under the bus.
Yeah, it could be some kind of timing issue too, you know, where he's getting there too soon on one kick and too late on another kick. And, you know, and that's purely mechanics. That's just rote mechanics, you know. So it could be something like that at this point. And, you know, that gets into your head, no doubt.
But we have definitely had a turnstile of long snappers in the past couple of years. What's up with that? Other than Brett Goode is about 108 years old, and that's why he was shown the door finally.
Well, and the interesting thing is, J.J. Molson is a kicker they have kept on the practice squad all season long. Now, you would think in a season in which we have a lot of injuries at positions that require a lot of bodies, like offensive line or defensive back, you'd probably want that spot to start cultivating some people to step in case, like, you have Elgton Jenkins get injured too. But we've kept a kicker there, which to me is kind of rare. Why are we keeping him then? What's kind of the message we're sending with that?
Well, I've kind of said from the beginning, and a lot of people have disagreed with me on this, that it's about next year, that they like this guy, and this is going to be Crosby's last year with the Packers, and he's going to be the Packers kicker next year, this Molson guy, so let's hold on to him. A lot of people disagree with that, but that's my thing.
Well,
it's interesting because you never hear about developing kickers. You hear about developing receivers and cornerbacks and QBs, but a receiver or a kicker? That's interesting. That's an interesting take. I'm not saying you're wrong. It's just an interesting take.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's so really, like you said, Sidi, it's kind of strange to keep a kicker on your practice squad all year. And, you know, some people said, well, that's because of COVID, you know, you have to have somebody. Like, okay, that's a possible explanation, but I don't know. Maybe I'm being cynical or whatever the right word is, but I think it has to do with next year. Anyway.
Time will tell.
Is literally an eighth generation descendant of John Molson, who founded the brewing company that presently owns Molson Coors. So maybe there's some Miller connection there that they have to keep him on the roster too.
Better Canada's got some dirt on us.
So
blame Canada.
Blame Canada. Yeah, absolutely.
Blame Canada. Jersey Al Kelly, you are the GM. You're under pressure. You're going into the bye week. Crosby, let's say he goes in and misses another field goal or two next week. What do you do over the bye week with Mason?
Well, have them practicing 2 hours a day every day.
But I wouldn't go overboard because then he's really going to become a head case. Honestly, I think you bring in your sports psychologist and work with him. They have one on staff. I think it's not the practice. It's getting into the right headspace.
Might be doing that already. Who knows?
I hope they are.
Do you
tell
Mason to go inactive for a week and let's just see how much he does?
No.
I know what you want us to say, and we're not.
You want us to concede? No way, man.
No.
So you're gonna die on this hill.
Yes.
You're dying on the Mason Crosby hill.
I am. The irony of ironies.
The fact that LaFleur hasn't called him, you know, the beer dude, he's probably not ready yet. And he's sticking with Mason because there's nothing else out there. So you got to deal with what you have. And the way you deal with it is you get him to believe in himself right now. And right now you can see it on his face. Every time he misses, you can just see a little bit of him just kind of, you know, the shoulders hunch, the body posture. You know, he's sick of missing as well. And he doesn't need to be told, hey, kick better. He's got to write his own mind. And I think once that happens, as we're heading down the playoffs, I think he'll be okay.
Are you telling me I should stop tweeting that to Mason Crosby? Kick better?
Shut up.
Helping? Okay.
Shut up, Steve.
Got it. All right. We're going to stay on the Mason Crosby train until it crashes. So thank you very much. We're going to call that a loss.
0-3.
0-3 today.
Hey, we're number one.
Moving on to the fourth quarter, and that is the playoff picture. We can start talking a little bit about our matchup coming up this Sunday with the Rams. But we went from having the number one seed in home field advantage through the playoffs as of last week to suddenly being back down to second after our loss to the Vikings. I don't know if you noticed, the Vikings have also now presently snuck into the sixth seed in the playoffs as well. So, yeah, a lot of hurt all around. the Packers now have a 2.5-game lead in the NFC North over the Vikings. But if we were to lose to L.A. and Minnesota wins against the 49ers, it'll only now be suddenly a 1.5-game lead in the NFC North, something that I think a few weeks ago we said, this is done. But the Vikings, unfortunately, are pretty hot right now.
Just keep in mind, though, you know, there's that dropping to second in home field advantage against Arizona. If we end up even with them, we win on tiebreak.
Right.
So it's something that isn't insurmountable. And the next time we see the Vikings, they're going to be on the home turf. So we'll have the Packers will have an advantage there. We just have to play clean ball all the way through. And I think We can still manage to get a good seed, even if we lose to the Rams this week.
Well, we might not have a choice. We might lose the Rams, kind of surprisingly, they actually went on a two-game skid themselves before their bye week last week. They've actually dropped out, and they are now, of course, the top wild card, the number five seed right now. They're a game and a half behind, half a game behind Arizona in the NFC West. So they're going to come back. They're going to be rested up, and they're motivated to come into Green Bay and do something. So I don't know. Game plans, guys. What do we do this week?
Try not to get hurt.
For one. Al, how do we change this? What's the game plan?
How do we change the playoff seeding? Or how do we change
How do we get a win?
We run the friggin' ball. Okay. When we have 5 yards to go for a first down on third, we pass the ball 7 yards. We don't pass
Not
the
15.
Ball 30. We don't
Not
pass 40. The ball 15. We don't pass the ball 40. We get the first down and then run some more.
I would have to agree with that.
This is how the 49ers were successful against the Rams. Run the ball consistently. Keep the ball out of their hands as much as you can. Something that teams used to do to the Packers, well, it's time for us to do it to a team like the Rams.
And I think on the flip side is we are going up against Matthew Stafford, are we not?
Yes, we are.
So we've got his number. I think you've got to get in his head and remind him that he looks very good on the ground after he's been smacked pretty hard by Kenny Clark. And I think we have to get to him where he can't establish an aerial game and get him playing like the Matthew Stafford of ages old. Even when he had Megatron, you could still get him to start making very predictable mistakes. And I think we have to play two very clean sides of the ball. The cornerbacks have to shut down his options, and we have to get him flustered early, and then he starts making the mistakes and throwing up those quackers that everyone, the interceptions that could be easily grabbed.
Unless you're the Packers defensive backs, yes. The Cowboys are going to be playing on Thanksgiving. They're playing the Raiders. A win for them and then a Packers loss would also drop the Packers to the overall third seed going into the bye. So, there's a lot going into the bye that I'm nervous about. The good news is that on the other side, the last five games, I think there's only two teams with winning records that are on the roster, that are on the schedule. One is Cleveland, who's not looking that good right now.
No, they're not. They're
and the other is Minnesota. So, and I think there's going to be, we're going to be very happy to see them in Lambeau Field.
And I'm just looking at the Vikings schedule from here on out, and they have to play the Rams as well. They have to play the Steelers, which are good, bad, and the ugly. But then they just have it could be a very similar record heading to the final stretch that we have. So we have really no margin of error.
Well, and I'll kind of disagree. I'll say I think things look good at the end of those last five games. So if we can get a win going into the bye, I'm pretty happy because that'll help us a little bit with our positioning. But I don't know. I suppose we should just get to this week's game predictions and talk about that.
There we go.
Cheesehead Radio, Packer Game Predictions.
All right. The Packers are limping into their last game before the bye, taking on the LA Rams, who are also on a skid, losing their last two games, and are 7-3 to the Packers 8-3. This game will go a long way in helping determining some playoff seeding at the end of the season, so it's been circled on the calendar for a while. It's a Sunday afternoon game at Lambeau Field, late game, at the end of November. Great football weather. The Rams are coming off a bye week, and the Packers open up as 3-point favorites at home. I don't know if there's a bigger game on the schedule right now this year. How do we see it going, gang? Jersey Al, as always, we'll start with you.
All right. Well, I've only picked the Packers to lose once this season. That was when they were facing the 49ers and their elite pass rushers, just as Elgton Jenkins would not be available and the unproven Yash Nyman would have to step in. Sound familiar? Well, welcome to Week 12, only this time they're also missing Josh Myers, so three of their offensive line starters will not be there to battle with Von Miller, Aaron Donald, and Leonard Floyd. Much like last week, when I said the Packers would need turnovers to beat the Vikings, it's even more imperative this week. They sure had their chances last week, so let's hope luck is more on their side this Sunday. Against all odds, and the odds are steep, I'm picking the Packers to pull out a last-second win 24-23 with the embattled Mason Crosby winning the game. Drama.
Eternal dun, dun, dun. Optimist. Love it.
Jersey Pollyanna.
Yes.
Hey, that's not nice.
No, Pollyanna was very sweet. It's totally nice.
Okay.
All right.
In New Jersey, we consider that an insult. So, just so you know.
I'm sure you do.
Call somebody a Pollyanna. What, you're saying I'm nice?
Means you're really optimistic, Al, is what I'm saying. I'm not,
I know.
I'm not throwing any East Coast shade here.
Come I know what it means. Go ahead.
The Packers can, in the course of 7 days, go from firmly in control of their own destiny to going into their bye week 8-4, losing three out of their last four games. Now, I'm all about optimism and hope.
Sure.
Whatever.
But the injuries, including dermatological phenomenons, have definitely caught up to the Packers, and the well-rested Rams have just as much to prove right now. Maybe Rodgers opens the game up actually running the game plan. Maybe the offensive line is able to hold, and maybe OBJ doesn't light up our corners like Jefferson did last week. I sure hope so. But hope and 295 gets you a latte at Starbucks. Rams 28, Packers 24.
Where are you getting a latte at Starbucks for 295?
Yeah, we have real cheap ones around here.
And by the way, phenomena is the plural of phenomena. Kelly.
All right, I guess if you're Jersey Pollyanna, I guess I'm Debbie Downer. So welcome to the low point of the 2021 season. Injuries are starting to catch up with the Green Bay Packers, and even a magical holiday weekend game at home may not be enough good karma to overcome the obstacles that they are currently facing as they head towards the last third of the season. Turf toe, blown knee, too many big guns are either on the injury list right now or IR altogether. And then there's the whole kicking problem. It's not happening this week, folks. Let's get the reset at the bye and start over again. Rams 31, Packers 27.
Nice job there, Pollyanna.
I was Debbie Downer.
Well, Wisconsin whiner? I don't know. You have to think of something with Wisconsin.
I would love to be pleasantly surprised with this game, though.
Oh, of course. I plan to be right.
I want to find a Starbucks that'll give me a latte for $2.95. So, you know.
Good luck with that.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us on Cheesehead Radio, now in our 12th season. Make sure to head over to PackersTalk.com, where you can listen to several unique Packers podcasts. Please follow at PackersTalkNet on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers Talk podcasts can be heard on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the pod, show us some love and leave us a review. You can also find us on Siri, Alexa, or Google just by saying, Play Packers Talk Podcast. That's a wrap. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Go Pack Go.
Happy Turkey Day. Go Pack.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Go Pack Go.